young newcomers and aging veterans. Unknown club pros and the superstars of golf begin 4 days of competition. In the beginning, they will not only be competing against each other, but against themselves. For golf is the most personal and self-centered of all sports. A man's performance is entirely his own affair. He is master or victim of his own destiny.
Welcome back to the Golfers Journal podcast presented by Titleist, the number one ball in golf. My name's Tom Coyne. Thanks so much for joining us. And as many of us come out of our winter golf slumber, an easy way to sharpen your short game is, of course, a fresh set of grooves, especially if those grooves are spin milled into a new Vokey Design SM10 wedge. Bob Vokey and his team are always grinding, and the work shows in the SM10s. They're already a favorite among the best wedge players in the world. They were designed with the three keys to great wedge play in mind, and those three keys are shot versatility, distance and trajectory control, and maximum spin. So with the SM10s, I feel like I've picked up a little distance in my 46 and in my 50, and I feel a lot more confident in that 100 to 130 yard range. A great trajectory, maybe a little bit lower on those clubs, but still, I feel like I have all the feel and the control with my 54 and 58 around the green. So of course, if you want to play your Vokey wedges, if you want them to work the best for you and get that right ground interaction so you get that effortless feel of the club head moving through the turf or the sand, you need to get the right grind and bounce. So find the nearest Vokey fitter or use the online wedge selector tool to unlock the right SM10s for you at Vokey.com. There will be a lot of Vokey SM10s in play at the upcoming PGA Championship, which is on all our minds as we look to Valhalla. Now, this week on the pod, eminent golf writer Jim Moriarty joins us to share an essay on the PGA Championship from 1974. Don't remember it? Well, neither does anybody else, apparently, even some of the players who played in it. So we thought it was worth taking a look at the forgotten major played at the very public Tanglewood Park in North Carolina that you can play today for $50. Now, Jim Moriarty has penned some of the best sentences to appear in the Golfers Journal, so we're thrilled to have him back on the podcast to remind us why it is indeed worth remembering the lost championship of 74. Also worth remembering is that Father's Day is coming up faster than you think. Give Dad the gift of golf. If you're a member, now is the time to bring Dad into the BTS. If you aren't a member, we encourage you to give your dad a gift that lasts an entire year and then some. Quarterly delivery of the TGJ book gives him the quiet time he wants to sink into his favorite seat of the house and tune into the game that he loves. Plus, of course, hundreds of dollars of savings in the member locker, world-class event access, and all the myriad benefits of Golfers Journal membership. So go to golfersjournal.com and get your dad or whomever you love a gift membership today. Thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for all your support of the Golfers Journal. Now, quiet, please. Next up on the Golfers Journal podcast, Jim Moriarty and the best major no one remembers.
Ah, the PGA. I'm deeply and profoundly in like with it, regardless of where it falls on the calendar. Lodged in golf's hierarchy is the eternal fourth of four, it tries. Lord knows it tries. Loved a smidgen less than the rest. Its history is a bit like the fellow who can't seem to find clothes that fit. Bless its 106-year-old heart. It began in the fall, moved to the summer, and now it's in the spring. Winter should be out of the question, but you never know with the PGA. It changed from match play to medal in 1958, and navel gazers still wonder if that was a good idea. It's been won 5 times each by Walter Hagen and Jack Nicklaus, and 4 times by Tiger Woods. Three of the most prolific collectors of titles of significance the game has ever known, which should grant it a lofty level of legitimacy. And yet, we wouldn't really count on it to run the family business, now would we? There was a time, not so very long ago, when the best players in the world were flying to America from Europe on the Concorde. To the Faldos and Sevies and Woozies, the PGA held all the glitz and glamour of the championship of the Pipefitters Union. In 1957, with Hagen and Ben Hogan and Sam Snead mostly in the rearview mirror, Herbert Warren Wynn was already bemoaning the quality of the PGA's venues. Much more often than not in recent years, the PGA Championship was held on layouts quite unworthy of the event, he wrote then. It was a stigma, fairly or unfairly, that attached like a barnacle to the underbelly of the championship for decades. The reality was far more nuanced. For every Pecan Valley, there was a Southern Hills or Congressional. Besides, anyone who has ever witnessed the ebbs and flows of a Ryder Cup knows that the game doesn't require a great work of art as its setting to provide a suitable stage for compelling theater. Shakespeare is still Shakespeare, whether it's in the Globe or the Cinema 10. Valhalla, the site of this year's PGA, makes the point, to steal from Wood's famous gesture in his playoff with Bob May in 2000. And if you somehow are of the belief that the Wanamaker Trophy is a lesser tchotchke, you haven't talked to the man who owns one. Right, Padraig, Rory, JT? 50 years ago, the PGA of America, in all likelihood enticed by a spittoon full of tobacco money, ventured into the wilderness of a massive park outside Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to play on a public golf course no one would ever confuse with Pebble Beach or Pinehurst No. 2. It nonetheless managed to produce as satisfying a week of high-level yet soggy golf as any other you've completely forgotten. It was wet and wonderful. It was Jack Nicklaus and Lee Trevino, and golf, then or now, doesn't get much better than that. Feel free to argue amongst yourselves over who the greatest player of all time was, but this much is true. From the moment Nicklaus took Arnold Palmer to overtime in 1962 at Oakmont, Jack's ecosystem included a continuous string of great, not just good, but great players who were unafraid to go toe-to-toe and eyeball-to-eyeball with him, beginning with Palmer and including Gary Player, Lee Trevino, and Tom Watson. And so it was when Nicklaus had another shot at his nemesis Trevino at Tanglewood Park Golf Course in 1974. It was a week to remember, even if most people, including many of the protagonists, don't.
The second day of competition, rain added another element of difficulty to this most challenging course. But the soggy fairways did not bother Gary Player, who poured forth a succession of perfect strokes and set a new course record with a 6-under par 64, which tied the all-time PGA tournament record. The weather also had little effect on Bobby Cole, who ended the day tied for third with Player. Both Cole and Player were one stroke behind Hubert Green. And Green was one stroke behind the surprising John Schlee, whose trusty putter gave him sole possession of first place with a two-day total of 135.
I don't remember it, Gary Player said when asked years later about the 64 he shot in the second round. I couldn't have shot a 64. I must have been in a dream. I couldn't have shot a 64 and not remember it at all. But I just can't. Part of the reason for this might be because big league history was being made elsewhere. On the evening of Thursday, August 8, the same night Raymond Floyd, Hubert Green, and the PGA Tour's leading astrological soothsayer, John Schlee, would sleep on the first round lead, Richard Nixon announced in an address from the White House's Oval Office,
"Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office."
Talk about getting your stars crossed. Tanglewood may have been inundated with days and days of rain, but it had nothing on Watergate. After Nixon, the outside world thankfully kept its distance from golf's majors until O.J. Simpson crawled down an L.A. freeway in a white Bronco during the 94 U.S. Open at Oakmont. High crimes and misdemeanors notwithstanding, the telling details of a championship tend to be a hodgepodge of the before and during. Robert Trent Jones Sr. designed the Tanglewood Park course in 1958 and came back to fluff the pillows for the 74 PGA. This involved increasing the number of bunkers to a staggering 111. To Golf World magazine, they looked like giant jigsaw puzzles dropped from the Goodyear blimp. They were everywhere. What wasn't anywhere was a clubhouse, so they built one. As it turned out, however, it wasn't the bunkers or the clubhouse that coincidentally is being torn down this year that proved the most significant influence on scoring. It was the rain, enough to make the adjacent Yadkin River run as muddy as the Mississippi. It was August in the South. Thunderstorms are as omnipresent as sweet tea. It rained so much the week prior to the championship that Jones, on site to check out his menagerie of bunkers, measured it in gallons, 21 million by his reckoning. It continued to fall lightly but consistently early in tournament week before a biblical 45-minute deluge on Friday sealed the playing conditions irrevocably. The upshot was the greens were as soft as banana pudding and the fairways broadened by a lack of roll. And, in case you're wondering, 1974 was several decades prior to mud balls becoming the scourge of Western civilization the modern player believes them to be. The old guys just kind of got on with it. Since it was too wet to mow the Bermuda rough, it blossomed into a thick, gnarled, wet, 4.5-inch deep hazard, far more penalizing than any bunker. The fairway was the only place to play from, and very few players have understood how to do that better than Lee Trevino, whose hard scrabble, caddy yard fade was the signature of one of the great ball strikers of all time. This was a man who could flight the ball lower than a basketball goal and back it up like a yo-yo if he wanted to. The PGA Tour Champions Tournament, the Vantage Championship, was played at Tanglewood Park from 1988 through 2002. During one of Trevino's years playing in it, he was asked about 74, and Lee, typically half-joking, said the only thing he could remember was that he never missed a fairway. That wasn't the funny part, because he wasn't far wrong. The late Tom Weisskopf was not among the players who cut the PGA any slack for democratizing its championship by taking it to a public golf course, which today carries a 3 decidedly nondescript stars out of 5 on Golf Pass, if you're into that kind of thing. Weisskopf, glib and whip-smart, rarely held back his opinions, and never when he was talking to Sports Illustrated's Dan Jenkins. In the 2 years before Tanglewood, the PGA visited Oakland Hills and Canterbury. After Tanglewood, it was booked into Firestone, Congressional, and Pebble Beach. "But in between, we had to have this," Weisskopf said. His unhappiness floated to the surface in a spritzing rain on the 16th hole on Friday, the same day Player dreamed up his course record 64. By some estimates, Weisskopf took 9 putts, though 7 seems to be the overall consensus, some with the putter held upside down. According to Jenkins, the conversation Weisskopf had with a PGA rules official went something like this. "I'm injured. I quit." "What's your injury?" "I'm 25 over." The PGA Championship in 74 was conducted in the antediluvian days when players were not allowed to use their own caddies. Nicklaus's bag was being carried by a local heating and air conditioning salesman. Player's 64 came with his usual caddy, Alfred Rabbit Dyer, in a supporting role only, scouting the setup before each round. His on-course caddy was Clarence Symington, an inspector for Reynolds Tobacco. Schley, who held the halfway lead by a shot over green, was in a 70s Age of Aquarius kind of mood. "When your astrological outlook is not good, you just have to try a lot harder," he said. "The stars influence, but they do not compel." Good to know. What was compelling was some swing advice he got 3 years prior from Ben Hogan. That's better than astrology or a good putting stroke, the tea leaves revealed.
Nothing like the putting green holds such deathless moments of suspense and pressure for both the gallery and the golfer. The professionals believe that a putter is a direct pipeline to a man's character. No part of a golf course receives as much attention from the golfers as the green. It is impossible to win in championship competition unless a man putts supremely well.
Trevino was ultimately the one who hit the Zodiac jackpot. He found it in the attic of the house he'd rented for the week in nearby Bermuda Run from a woman named Zanna Mayberry, who asked him to take a look at her late husband's golf clubs in the event they might be worth something. What he found was a putter with a paper base under the grip. "I've been looking for one like this for years, but they quit making them 15 years ago," Trevino said. It went straight into the bag. "Mrs. Mayberry told me that if I won the tournament, I could have it," Trevino said a month later during the World Open in Pinehurst, a tournament that coincided with the opening of the World Golf Hall of Fame, an event attended by the new president of the United States, Gerald Ford. "She doesn't know it, but I probably would have taken it anyway," he said. Trevino came into the PGA Championship in a dour mood. Just a month earlier at the Open Championship at Royal Lytham and St. Anne's, the man the headline writers loved to call Merry Mex was grousing about a schedule stuffed full of things he couldn't say no to and then didn't want to do, gift-wrapped inside a general lack of privacy. After a second-round 66 got him in contention on a golf course perfectly suited to his skill set, his outlook improved markedly. "Ain't nothing like a low round to make you untired," he said. Trevino killed time in the evening shooting hoops by himself in the driveway in Bermuda Run. "When I miss a shot, I'm Jerry West," Lee said, "and when I make one, I'm me." He was himself on Sunday, taking a one-stroke lead over Nicklaus and South African Bobby Cole into the final round. In the four major championships, two U.S. Opens and two Open championships, Trevino already had to his credit, Nicklaus was the biggest hurdle in each. The two had, and still have, a deep and abiding respect for one another. Nothing got Trevino going like the chance to play Nicklaus, and for his part, Jack knew all too well that Lee didn't have a reverse gear.
Jack Nicklaus, the defending king, concentrating only on victory, satisfied with nothing less. Lee Trevino, the clown prince, easy, loose, yet hardening under pressure to achieve. Trevino opened a two-stroke lead over Nicklaus by playing his typical brash brand of hustler's golf. His accuracy with his irons put him inside of Nicklaus almost every time they arrived at the green.
Things got as funny as a rubber snake after Nicklaus made birdie on the fifth. "He accidentally put his putter in my bag," Trevino said. "He couldn't find it when he reached for it on the sixth green. I said, 'Hey, man, are you trying to give me 15 clubs? Tell you what, I'll take the two if you promise me you won't use that thing the rest of the round.'" The 17th proved to be the championship's decisive hole. To begin with, it was the end for Cole, who had eagled his first hole of the day with a sand wedge from 78 yards. The South African hung in until he duck-hooked his drive under a tree on 17. He tried to play it, whiffed, and made double bogey 6. In the end, it wasn't Mrs. Mayberry's putter that landed the knockout blow. It was Trevino's driver, the club that kept him in play all week. In The Snake in the Sand Trap, the book Trevino authored with Dallas Morning News sports writer and editor Sam Blair, Lee said his tee shot on the sharp dogleg left 17th was one of the best shots he ever hit. Ever. For someone who possessed the stunning repertoire of shots Trevino had, that's saying something. Using a 1960 model McGregor driver with a nickel insert in the face, the club he wielded in one of his U.S. Open wins and both of his British Opens, he hit a sweeping hook around the corner. "I decided to hook it, and it came off perfect," he said. Nicholas looked at me as though I had just lost my mind. "Hell, I was surprised, too. I've never been able to draw the ball too well. I just don't have the feel of the flow, but this time I had it just right." The part he didn't have right belonged, or once belonged, to the deceased husband of Mrs. Mayberry. Trevino hit a 4-iron to 20 feet, left his first putt short, then missed the next one, too. "My mind said to hit it hard, but my hands wouldn't move," Trevino said. What do they say? Dead men's putters tell no tales? Anyway, that cut his lead over Nicholas to one shot with one hole to play. Both drove well off the 18th with Lee hitting driver and Jack a 3-wood. Nicholas's second left him a 20-footer for birdie, with Trevino just inside him.
With Trevino only 18 feet from the cup and almost certain to par, Nicholas needed this birdie putt for a chance to win.
When Nicholas missed, Trevino putted a foot or so past the hole.
Trevino's first putt ended a foot from the hole, and he nervously asked permission to putt out.
After his experience on 17, he wasn't anxious to rely on Mrs. Mayberry's good graces again. He looked at Nicholas and Hubert Green and asked if he could putt out. "I'm choking to death, man," he said.
Nicholas and Hubert Green nodded approval, and the 56th annual PGA Championship was over.
What I decided was I got to go out and play with Jack, so I'm going to go for everything. I went right for the flag all day, practically. You have to against Jack, Trevino said afterwards. It marked the 12th time Nicholas had been a runner-up in a major, in addition to his 14 titles, and four of those had come against Trevino. And, as if there was nothing else to talk about, 62-year-old Sam Snead shot 69, 71, 71, 68, dragging his balky putter behind him, to finish tied for third a mere 22 years after he won his first PGA at match play. "I guess it's always going to be that way," he grumbled. The victory meant that Trevino was one green jacket shy of the career Grand Slam. He said he'd be going back to the Masters, a tournament he'd skipped the previous 2 years, if they'll have me. Some people said Trevino didn't play Augusta because the golf course didn't suit him. Nicholas, for one, knew that no one, neither Scottish Sheep nor Robert Trent Jones, had ever built a golf course Trevino couldn't play. "Jack says I'm capable of playing the course, so I must be," said Lee. As for Mrs. Mayberry's putter, "I'm going to have a line of them coming out in about 2 months," Trevino joked at the World Open in Pinehurst. "I may call it Mrs. Mayberry's putter, or I may call it the Andy Griffith."
Thanks for listening, everyone. And if you enjoyed this episode, we strongly encourage you to become a member of the Golfer's Journal, or if you already are, to share it with your friends. As a reader-supported publication, we couldn't do it without you. We also couldn't do it without the help of our partners, and they are Titleist, Scotty Cameron, FootJoy, Holderness & Born, Omega, Charles Schwab, and BMW. We'll see you next time on the Golfer's Journal podcast.